This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Ahmad Fahd Rahmat.
I'm Vizla Kumarasan.
And you're listening to Digital Desires. It's been a long time coming, but we're finally talking about sex. This time, sex with robots, which is something that, if you've been on social media, if you've just been checking out the news, it's something that you can't miss, at least this year, right? It's been making headlines for some time. So what comes to mind first, Vizla, when you hear about sex robots?
Repulsion.
Repulsion, okay.
Right, so yeah, that's the first thought that comes to mind the moment you say sex with robots. I mean, it's gross. It's yuck. Mm-hmm. Like, why would people do that? Yeah. But of course, I did get enlightened. I did some research and it's being used, or at least the idea is being used to promote healthy sexual behavior among people with disabilities. And also, this is something I didn't really think about, people who have undergone traumatic sexual past, mm-hmm. and are trying to overcome their trauma or deal with their trauma and to be able to experience sexual contact in a very safe way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we often hear about the more sensationalist stuff, right, about certain fantasies that are being played out with these machines, but you're pointing out the positive outcomes, the potentially positive outcomes. And that is the therapeutic benefits it could be geared towards, right? So people who have suffered trauma, trust issues, maybe body confidence issues in light of that trauma can somehow use these machines to get better, quote
mm-hmm,
unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was this ever a difficulty for a long time for those people to actually feel comfortable sexually before what did they do before sex robots were invented for that purpose?
Well, I think a lot of people just didn't have sex. Mm. I mean, that's the thing, right? And having sex is not a bad thing. It's a very human need. It's a very human want. You know, we all have sexual desires, fantasies, and we all want to act on those things. And that's very... So I think before this, people either didn't do it, which is in itself painful,
mm-hmm.
or they force themselves to do it with very painful consequences.
Right.
Right. So in that way, it's both pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Interesting. Now, but what about the repulsive part? What actually got you disgusted?
Well, firstly, it's the very idea. I mean, I'm a very visual person. You say something and an image pops in my mind. And the image that popped up when you say sex with robots is not very pleasant.
Right.
Right. And of course, there are a whole bunch when I got over that image, a whole bunch of moral, ethical issues have come up. And that's what you get with me, right? Moral and ethics, right?
No, I think it's in line with what we've been talking about, right? The new questions that might not be addressed or might not be thought about as we transition into this more digitalized world. I am somewhat on the fence in that I agree with you that there are a lot of reprehensible things that can happen, you know, because some of the manufacturers are basically peddling the products based on the fact that they can be programmable. And a lot of the features that they promote are inherently sexist features, right?
Yes.
So there is a doll that is like barely 18 or something like that.
Yes.
And like there's you can program to be very docile and submissive at the same time.
And there was one of course Frigid Farah.
Yeah, Frigid Farah was one of them.
And that is it's a landmine.
Yeah, I mean,
even
it's
the
code
name
for
Frigid.
Aggression and violation, right? Because
right.
the idea is that in that mode, you can force the man, presumably, can force himself onto the robot,
and which allows for people to act out rape fantasies that may be safe in a certain way. You can act out. Some people do have these fantasies,
mm-hmm.
right? You can act out a rape fantasy in quote unquote safe ways because it's not a real person,
mm-hmm.
right? Who's being traumatized, but also you need to also question the why people are having these rape fantasies. Mm-hmm. And why
how it's become popular that exactly. they would market these products around that,
yes,
right?
Yes, right. And the other thing, aside from it being sexist, right? I mean, yes, it objectifies women. You, of course, will get... You're not going to get a robot who looks like a typical woman. You're going to get a robot that looks like an idealized, fantasized mm-hmm. woman, right? That's one of the issues. Mm-hmm. The other thing also is the fact that it's also very heterosexist. Mm-hmm. It's being sold as a very heterosexual sort of tool, and that also is problematic.
At this point, though, because I can see the technology being used both ways, right? In that this company called Real Doll are trying to cater to feminine sexual needs as well. So there's one that is featured, a robot that is being featured for having a bionic penis, right? So
all
you
right.
can program the intensity, the speed, and, you know, other features that would, that, you know, mortal
size.
Men can't at times fulfill, right? So I think there is this obvious beginning to market it to standard, basic, crude, heterosexual male fantasies. But there are indications that they want a bigger market, and then they might tap into less, quote-unquote, normative orientations as
yes.
well. So there's a lot of mystery in this, because I think there are a lot of things that we haven't wrapped our heads around, even with normal human sex, right? What more bringing robots into it? But I wonder if this is much more different from the kinds of porn that's already out there, right? So when I went to the websites, like the Real Doll website and a few others, like the True Companion website, the aesthetic is very pornographic, mm-hmm. right? The kind of colors they use. In fact, some of these dolls are so digitally airbrushed as to make them look so human as possible
yeah.
that you can't quite tell if these are just sort of like anime-like kind of characters, or are they actually like physical robots, right? Because the whole pitch is that these robots are lifelike. So you're not doing it with an RTD2 or something like that. You're doing it with a human substitute that
yeah.
is actually in robot form, right? So so do you draw the line at all between this and pornography?
I don't know. I mean, pornography is problematic for a whole bunch of different issues. And there are whole, you know, there's a whole host of feminist discourse and other things around pornography. But with pornography, you're dealing with real human beings. And with that comes things like agency. There are issues like consent. There's issues like, you know, being exploited. And also, of course, there's issue of disease. With robots, it's a very different issue. You bypass a lot of those things. So when it comes to disease, for example, it's quote-unquote safe. But then again, you're dealing with an inanimate object.
Yeah.
Therefore, there's no such thing as consent. That might sound good to some people, but for me, it's rather troublesome.
Yeah, because you're wondering what is the sexual attitude that's being cultivated in the process.
Absolutely.
Right? What is your outlook towards
yes.
your sex partner
yes.
that you're assuming as you're fulfilling these fantasies with this physical thing?
Exactly.
Even though it's a robot, right?
Right.
Because at the end of the day, we still have to socialize and mingle with real human beings. We haven't replaced our friends with robots yet, or colleagues, not yet at least. But that transition is worrying for me. If you normalize sex with robots, then how does this impact then your attitude towards the opposite sex, right? Because you're so accustomed to having this subservient product at home.
Not just the opposite
right?
sex, but just people in general, mm-hmm. right? Because the very essence of human interaction, in whatever casual, intimate, it's reciprocal, right? I see something, you see something back,
mm-hmm.
right? And this is also true with healthy sexual behavior. It's not just about you and your pleasure, but it's also about the other person and their pleasure. And also how they respond, how they react, whether they want to have sex or not. All those things constitute healthy sexual behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You take that away, and then you just focus on the sexual pleasure of one person, the person who has purchased the object and wants to use that object for a
yeah.
certain reason. What kind of sexual behaviors is that cultivating?
Yeah. But how about from the simple consumer end of it, in that you have this thing that's programmable, right? And you know that it won't harass you. You know that you can make a clean break. You can like take off the batteries or something when you don't want it anymore, right? You just kind of like, you know, gone are the days when you have to like block them on Twitter, block them on Facebook.
You can just take out the batteries.
Yeah, take out the batteries and you don't have to worry about it, like, you know.
Or just don't charge it.
Misinterpreting your feelings or whatever, misinterpreting your no or whatever. There is a sense in which this caters to the safe space discourse, right? Because this is finally programmable. You can tell them what words not to use. You can tell them what gestures not to make. You can tell them how far it is that they have to keep the distance from, right? And stuff like that. So there is that parallel discourse as well, like you said, because for paranoid people, this is interestingly suited to their impulses, right? In that, finally, you have a partner you can control, right?
Well, yes. And then, of course, there is a flip side. And that flip side we will explore right
in the second
after
part of the show,
this break.
I will be right back. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahman alongside Vizla Kumarisan. And this is Digital Desires on BFM. BFM 89.9, you're listening to me, Ahmad Fuad Rahman, alongside Vizla Kumarisan. And this is Digital Desires.
So today we're talking about sex with robots. And before the break, we stopped at how this enables people to have the ideal sexual partner, in your words, someone you can control.
Totally
right?
Control, yeah.
Yes, totally control. You can program it to behave in a certain way that's not threatening, that's respectful, you know, that says the right things, that doesn't trigger you in any way. But on the other hand, this happens in real life. All these things happen in real life. You cannot program people to behave exactly the way you want them to. So if you are, again, cultivating this habit of being able to do that, I think it's fairly limiting in for your ability to actually interact in real-world situations with real human beings whom you cannot predict, whom you cannot control. And you can't, you know, you can't be guaranteed that they will say the things that you want them to say all the time. And that comes with, you know, and that brings with it a certain set of social skills that allows you to communicate, to compromise, to debate, to what else can we do? You know,
To relate, to empathize.
To negotiate. Mm-hmm. All these things which are necessary for human civilization to evolve.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head in that what the trend is slowly making us want to think or do is to treat other people like objects, right?
Yes.
So that when we socialize, we're frustrated that people can't bend to our desires, socializing itself becomes full of disappointment, right? Then we turn to these robots because they can finally just satisfy what we want. But you're right in that for as long as we care about being human, then these things you can't avoid. Now, I guess part of the thing for me is that when you say your initial reaction is repulsion, disgust, I relate to that, but I also sense like there's something very pathetic about it, right? In that there's a certain loneliness to wanting this sorts of sexual encounter with robots, you know.
Yes, and that brings about a certain kind of sadness as well.
Yeah, because I wonder what happens afterwards. Is there a cuddle program? Like, do you press the cuddle button, and you have a pillow talk feature or something, right? And do you download the topics that you like to have pillow talks with? So there's the aspect of intimacy, which is a part of the whole experience, right? It's not just genital pleasuring or control. But there is that space that opens up between two people where there's a certain level of trust and connection.
Or perhaps it doesn't matter what the other person says.
Yeah, maybe. Pillow talk. I think that's where it's going.
Yes, because I could still have pillow talk, but it's...
We're a robot.
Me. Talking on my pillow.
Yeah, talking to yourself, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's someone there. I've named it. It's... You know, I'm interacting with it. It's just not interacting back. And that's not my fault.
Yeah, typically sometimes interacting back, you know, becomes confusing as well, right? Because it rarely works like the movies where the banter is great, both are witty and the repartee is just like ideal, right? No.
And no one says the wrong thing that just, you know, switches everything off.
So I guess this is the real question then, right? What is it about sex or intimacy that is so daunting, confusing that people have turned to robots, right? I think that's where I'm thinking, in the sense that, all right, what causes the demand for these things, right?
Mm. Yeah, you're right. You know, I think we've revisited this in every show. I don't know how else to say it, but it seems like we are really losing that art of communication, losing that art of connecting with people in real life situations. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's a lot of work, though, isn't it?
It is. But yeah, that's how we have survived how many million years.
And that's the problem, too, is the vulnerability aspect of things as well. That it's ironic in that in a time when we're so interconnected, we're all always glued to our phones to be attentive to the next notice, the next beep, the next ring that tells you you've got a new tweet, you've got a new like. But at the same time, genuine communication is so difficult, right?
Yes.
So on one hand, you're always glued to the screen. On the other hand, the flesh of the matter, right, being able to be present with someone else becomes all the more of a riddle. Which brings me to the question of vulnerability, right? Because ultimately, it seems to me that what's at stake in wanting to have sex with robots is that or wanting to be in control of intimacy is that problem with vulnerability, right? And there's a new agey take on vulnerability that at first glance, if you don't go deep into it enough, it looks just like, you know, always being in sagely bliss or wisdom or something. No, but there's a lot about vulnerability that makes us ashamed, that makes us ridiculous, that makes us feel a bit embarrassed with ourselves, a bit taken by surprise with who we are. And that's a skill that I think we're compromising as well, right? In
yes,
this, in wanting control over our partners all the time.
Absolutely. And, you know, people also see vulnerability as a bad thing, where it doesn't always have to be, right? Even now with mental health, there's a lot of talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, but there's also now focus on post-traumatic stress growth, that it is not always a bad thing, that there is potential for you to grow, and that's where a lot of therapeutic energy is going into, right?
Can How you explain do you that? Grow? That's very interesting. Post-traumatic stress growth. So the idea is that the trauma is an opportunity for growth. Is that what it's
yes,
like?
Or, okay. Yes, right? If you think about it, you know, some people go through horrific, you know, trauma. But the fact that you're still alive, you're still here, you're still choosing to fight and live every day in itself is showing that you have chosen to grow rather than to give in.
Mm-hmm.
To the horrific consequences of this kind of trauma, mm-hmm, right? And so it's working on that and working on how you can also develop yourselves in any way. This is something that's happened to you. It isn't you,
mm-hmm,
right?
Right.
How do you then create a new story,
mm-hmm,
that involves that traumatic incident and involves you surviving every day?
Mm-hmm. And it might involve a sex robot at some point.
It may.
Yeah.
But the way I see it, it is a means to an end.
Right.
And
okay,
not
that's important.
An end in itself.
Yeah.
Right?
Robots are still tools.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
It's a safe way for you to feel, to allow yourself to be touched, to allow yourself to, you know, explore those things, which was very painful at one point,
mm-hmm,
right? But the focus is on to use that as a tool for you to overcome those things, mm-hmm, rather than as a substitute for real life, a real life interaction, sexual interaction.
And this is where I think the problem is more broadly social, in that in order to get to this level of finesse in understanding the very, you know, complexity of our feelings at a very granular level, right? That there must be a certain, I would just say, climate that makes that conducive, right? In that, the problem is that sex is often most framed publicly, and this is conservatives and liberals are as guilty about this in terms of danger.
Mm.
Right, so we can only talk about it when there's something to be alarmed about, when there's something to fear.
Mm.
If you're socialized in this climate, that's the first layer of interaction that you have with sex, you know. But what, based on what we're talking about, when we want to be seriously vulnerable, when we really want to work with the messy contours of intimacy, our emotional vocabulary with regards to sex has to be more expanded, right? Of course, there's a lot of dangers about it, but there's also a lot of weird things about it, pleasurable things about it, but the public seems to just want to be fixated on the dangers.
Absolutely. And I think this is where a revolution in sexual education needs to come in, right? Sexual education right now, where they have it, is very danger-focused, either with regards to disease or pregnancy, mm-hmm. right? So it's about understanding that sex is more than just that. Sex is also positive and sex is also complex. And you have to incorporate all these elements into a good sexual education curriculum. Mm-hmm. And that includes things like, how do you communicate? How do you negotiate? How do you, negotiate everything from condom use to even having sex in mm-hmm. the first place? Or how do you negotiate acts that you like to do that the other person doesn't want mm-hmm. to, right? How do you compromise? All those things needs to be included in mm-hmm. sexual education.
Yeah, and that requires like a certain collective awareness of the many dimensions of sex, right? That, you know, it's not just and something to be constantly alarmist about. Where do you see this going? You know, because I have in my more fearful moments, like this moment in 25 years when my daughter comes out and says that she's been dating a robot, you know, and I have to accept her for who she is. So I don't know. That's, you know, given the range of weird things that can happen in the world, that's a possibility. But is this just a fad? Do you think human beings are going to come and say, well, this isn't the real thing. I want, you know, a human life in all its complexity? Or is robots, sexual robots, going to be the way for the future? What's your sense?
Well, since you brought up your, you know, probable 25-year-old daughter, I'm hoping that when you do have her, right, you would raise her with the kinds of skills that's needed.
I hope so, yeah.
Right? To negotiate these things in real-life situations, that you would train her from a very early age mm-hmm. to speak, to put labels on her emotions, to own her emotions, to say, it's okay if somebody says no. It doesn't mean they're rejecting me. They're just mm-hmm. rejecting my offer. Mm-hmm. Right? All those things is something that you'll need to train your daughter from the time she is born.
Yeah, because sex robot is probably the easiest, most exaggerated worst-case scenario. But you already have things like the Kissinger. I don't know if you've heard about this.
No, I only know the real-life Kissinger, not the, you know.
Well, the Kissinger is basically a play with two words, kiss and messenger. And basically, it's this thing that you attach to your iPhone that will give you a sensation that's very similar to the human lips. And what this can do is that the other person who has a Kissinger, preferably your partner, can kiss you through this thing.
Wow.
And it will replicate the movement via the phone's sort of vibration feature.
Right.
Oh. So, yeah, so you can send a kiss.
Except you're not dealing with the warmth of a real human person. You're dealing with cold heart.
Not yet, but if they
phone
listen to
material.
This, if they listen to this episode, they might want to add that to their list of features, at least for the next version of it. But the Kissinger is awkward, I mean, based on the testimonies of its users, but it is picking up, right?
It's sanitary.
It's sanitary.
No
well,
saliva.
Well, I guess you can wash it after every use.
No saliva, no, you know, no human.
Yeah, so sex robots is, I guess, the most interesting thing to talk about, in the sense that these are robots. It's like, they can visualize it in very dramatic ways, but you have these small steps towards that same problem, right? The same set of problems in that we're trying to find mechanical substitutes for human touch, right?
Yeah.
So Kissinger is one
and
example,
you know, the
that.
Phrase that's coming to my mind now is, just because something is possible, just because we can do something, it shouldn't mean that we should do it.
Yeah. And I think there's something about distance that we're very ambivalent about, in the sense that when so much of the euphoria and optimism around all the advances of digital age is talked about, it's always talking about bridging gaps, you know, and then distance won't be a problem anymore, right? But I think there's something about the intrigue and mystery of distance in human communication, being able to think of a person differently when you miss them, and realizing the different ways you can feel towards someone when you're interacting with them less, actually enriches connections, right?
Absolutely.
It's not, like there's this thing where people assume that of a future where everybody's just like in like perennially attached, right? Which is a whole other set of problems too. So all this should be coupled with something that I think we all read a couple of days ago when the security guard robot killed himself, drowned himself in this pool, right? So people are sharing it, largely maybe out of anxieties of where technology is going, but sometimes we tend to overrate the power of these things too,
yes.
Right? There's a lot of things that are quite stupid about these robots or about the technology that we have, right? But we don't think about it often enough. Like, it's not just our use of it, but the idea of it sometimes is quite ridiculous too. So the hope is that a lot of these breakthroughs, these so-called advances, are not all that it's made up to be too, right? So that's what I'm counting on, at some point, that the bubble will burst, right?
If not, explode.
Yeah, take the whole planet with it, yeah. Anyway, that's our survey of sex robots for you. You can always email us at thebiggerpicture@bfm.my.
Or follow us on our Facebook page, Digital Desires. Just go to the search engine on Facebook and look for us, Digital Desires at BFM. Mm-hmm.
And thank you for listening. I'm Ahmad Fahd Rahmat.
I'm Visla Kumaresan.
And this is Digital Desires on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.